Hi, I'm Jeff Goldblum.
Interesting, complicated, you know, character.
Hi, and welcome to Lovey Jeff, a Jeff Goldblum appreciation podcast where a friend and I watch a Jeff Goldblum film and rate it on a 10 out of 10 Goldblum scale. Joining me today in the studio is Chris Lodando. So you may recognize him from his voice, at least, from Tell Him Steve Dave, correct? And other projects.
Sure. I do that sometimes. Yeah, I'm on there sometimes.
All right. So how's it going?
It's going all right.
Good.
I was excited to, when you said you had this podcast about Jeff Goldblum. Of course, I'm a big fan. And then the premise of it about having to watch a Jeff Goldblum film. And I was like, oh, yes, The Fly, Jurassic Park. Then
Beyond Therapy. That is the movie we will be discussing this week. And I forced him to watch it. So basically, I forced my guests to watch these films. I know. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
What, was it like $2.99 on the rental?
Yeah, $2.99 on Amazon.
You don't want to own this, Jeff?
No. I rented it, and I can't wait until it disappears from the server of Amazon.
All right, so that doesn't bode well. But Jeff Goldblum is with us. His little Funko Pop is, and he's staring at us. So try to be nice.
Yeah. I still love Jeff.
Okay. So Beyond Therapy opens up with a close-up of some tapestry. Classical music is playing. You hear, like, all these voices, I guess, of the characters. And you're listening in kind of like on a therapy session. And then the camera pulls away. You see, like, the therapy's office. Mm-hmm. And then you see Jeff Goldblum waiting to go on a date.
Right. So, you know, when you asked me to check this film out, so I immediately went to, like, IMDb to see, you know, who's in it. And there's some really, you know, really cool cast members in it. And more importantly, who directed it? Robert Altman. So he's kind of, you know, he's like a film Hollywood legend. But then when I was watching the film, so it was an off-Broadway play, I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay. And watching it, I got the feeling that it was shot almost like if you were an audience member of a play, because it felt like that, right? Like the way it moved?
Yeah, there were definitely scenes like in the restaurant, definitely, and in Jeff Goldblum's apartment, which is, his name is Bruce in it, where the staging, it does look like a play because everything is like, what is it like?
The stagnant shot.
Yeah, and it's just like focused there. Mm-hmm. The actors are walking in and out of doors, and
there's
see shadows. Yeah, there's not a lot of cuts. So the film is Beyond Therapy, as I mentioned earlier. It's a 1987 American comedy written and directed by Robert Altman, based on the play of the same name by Christopher Durang, and it stars Julie Haggerty, Jeff Goldblum, Glenda Jackson, Tom Coney, and Christopher Guest.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to mispronounce that name.
Yeah, yeah.
C-O-N-T-I. Let's go with that pronunciation.
Yeah. Conti.
Conti. I didn't want to say it because I have an accent, and then I was going to come off really, really wrong. I can't even speak because I have braces.
Juan somebody else.
Yeah, somebody else. So this is full mullet Goldblum era.
Yeah, it's unapologetically 80s, but like the not cool part of the 80s. Big, like, clothing was big, like shoulder pads. His jackets were just like you can like use as like a tent for like a you know, emergency service, like, you know, a hurricane disaster recovery. Like,
really, you could hide his glove in there.
Yeah. So it was like it was really 80s, the best way to describe it. I was excited when I saw that Julie Haggerty's in it. If everybody's familiar with Airplane, she was like the flight attendant in it, and she was great in that. So you notice some things in this film, how wouldn't fly today?
Oh my God, the homophobia in this film.
Oh, big time, big time.
I mean, the opening scene. Okay, so let me do this thing. So per Wikipedia, the film focuses on Prudence and Bruce, two Manhattanites who are seeking stable romantic relationship with the help of their respective psychiatrists. Stuart and the scatterbrained Charlotte, these are the therapists, each whom suggests the patient place a personal ad. The first meeting proves to be a disaster, but when they reunite, sparks between them fly, complications ensue when bisexual Bruce jealous living lover Bob decides to assert himself and do everything possible to maintain his status quo.
Right. So I guess, like, at the time, this was kind of like, you know, pretty bold to have, you know, this topic where it was, you know, bisexuality.
Yeah, homosexuality.
Homosexuality and bisexuality, because mm-hmm. Jeff Goldblum played a bisexual
man. Right, Bruce.
And immediately he starts talking about that in the first scene, and then Julie Haggerty's character says something that's like really like not so nice. She's like, "I hate." I don't know if she said,
"I hate homosexuals."
Yeah, she did.
Actually used those words.
Word, yeah,
because the F word is used later on.
They just warm you up.
Just warming you up. She's like, "I hate homosexuals," and she's like super uptight. And then, oh my God, let's talk about that guy in the background eating.
Okay.
That was so obnoxious in the restaurant.
The guy who sat at the same table
all the time. They could never get food service, but he could somehow.
He always got food service. He was a very strange looking guy, and he didn't talk. He didn't have any lines, right?
No, he had no lines.
Yeah,
he's just eating.
It's such like an off-Broadway play. Another thing about this movie that kind of bugged me is that it takes place in New York, but it was actually shot in Paris. As a New York snob, it's like, film it here.
Yeah, it seems like that would be easier.
Well, Robert Altman was living in Paris at the time, but still. They played like, you know, these rich Manhattanites, you know. And even like Jeff Goldblum's character's apartment.
Yeah.
I've seen apartments like that in
Manhattan. I want an apartment like that.
Where it's like there's like an upstairs, it's.
And the bedroom is like closed off with like these double doors.
It's almost like a, what do you call it? Like a bunk bed type mm-hmm. thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very odd. I was like, how am I going to get through this? So when it came out, so I was doing some research on it.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, you know, I guess in the 80s, whatever, there were two film critics that were like, you know, the gold like standard of
Roger
like,
Ebert.
Yeah. Gene Siskel and Roger mm-hmm. Ebert.
Right.
So they gave this film two thumbs down. Ebert, in his print review, gave it 1 star out of 4 and called it a film killed by terminal whimsy. It's a movie in which every scene must have seemed like a lot of fun at the time, but when they edit it together, there's no pattern to the movie, nothing built towards, no reason for us to care. It's all behavior, which I kind of got that too. Like, it must have been a fun, like, if you're a thespian type, if you're like a theater person,
you
would probably
nerd.
Love, like, this process because it was basically a play.
It was staged.
Yeah, it was a total stage play. So it looked fun, heavy dialogue, right?
As plays have.
As plays are heavy, and it looked kind of fun running around on, you know, on the stage and stuff. It's probably a lot of one take type of things they did because it's so much dialogue and that camera sits on them and doesn't cut to any mm-hmm. other closer shots or whatever. So
just to that weirdo eating
in the
background.
Yeah, just that weirdo eating. So yeah, I mean, it's a little bit difficult to digest it as a Jeff Goldblum fan, but it was rough. But what was your overall feeling of it?
These characters are insanely flawed and odd.
Yes.
So let's just start with that.
Right.
And there are some interesting and odd moments, like for instance, Bruce, which is Jeff Goldblum's character, mm-hmm. can only cry by placing eye drops.
Yeah.
So it's like all of his emotions are, you know, bottled in Visine bottles or something. Like it's so odd. And his crying.
And the therapist, like mm-hmm. his therapist and I guess Julie Haggerty's character's therapist, they're both terrible therapists.
They're they're the worst.
So her therapist, like has sex with his like patients, which is like, I think against the
store.
Law.
Yeah.
It's against the law. Right. And then, is it his therapist or is that his mom? I got confused.
No.
Who gets very jealous for,
oh yeah. The mom, Bob's mom gets really jealous
of
Bruce going on a date with a woman.
Right. It's such a mess. Christopher Guest is actually really good in it. So if anybody's familiar with, this is Spinal Tap.
Yes. That's
he plays
awesome
Nigel,
movie.
I believe, in Spinal Tap. This is a real departure from what you're used to seeing him. He's a really tremendous actor. One thing that really, you know, when you look at these films that are like pretty much dated and you kind of look at like what it was like maybe to live in that time. So I was kind of like a little bummed about the New York thing that because I like watching films about old New York that I remember. But
I wasn't born.
Sorry.
Just born, throwing that out there.
I'm going to the 70s, late 70s. One thing, though, there's a theme, not even, I wouldn't say a theme, but there's one instance towards the end where there's an active shooting.
I was going to talk about that. What the actual... In a restaurant.
Is that Christopher Guest? I forgot. Did he do it or somebody else did?
Bob?
Was it Bob?
Yeah, it was Bob.
It was Bruce. So, wait, no, Bob.
Wait.
Bob is Christopher Guest.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
So he pulls out a gun, and they're all sitting at a table, and he pulls out a gun and starts firing it at everyone in the, in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's like a slow motion. Everybody's like screaming and jumping and diving and this and that. Only to like later to be revealed that it's actually a starter pistol.
A starter pistol.
But
you hear it. You see the gun smoke.
You see
and
the
everything.
Smoke. People like diving, like you know, out of the way. It's like total chaos. And then like after that, they just everybody forgets about it. And
they're just sitting on a table, just talking.
Like forget about the mass shooting.
Yeah.
Like that, you know.
That would never.
No, today. Fly today. It would, yeah. No.
The language wouldn't fly today.
No.
That. The one thing that might still be available is those 80s boobs. They're boobs in the movie
they're
for
still around,
no reason.
I'm sure. Yeah, those 80s boobs.
I mean, the one patient is a non-binary person, and all of a sudden opens up the shirt, boobs. Then the person is in the shower, boobs.
So when growing up as a kid.
The waitress, boobs.
The ratings of like PG and like PG-13 and like rated R or whatever. But if you look at films that were PG back in the day to films that are PG today, it's completely different. In a PG film, you can see like a lot of nudity, like
wow.
Boobs and like butt for sure. Whereas today, you don't see that. So if you're looking at an 80s film and it's PG, thinking that you can sit down with your kid and watch it, expect to see like, you know,
yeah,
some serious boobage.
Yeah, it's. I think Porky's might be R, right?
Porky's is R. Yeah.
Was it R then?
Yes.
Okay, good, because,
that was
wow.
I mean, today's standards, I don't even know. Well, I don't know. They're kind of going wild again on these R films.
Yeah, they are. Definitely, you know, the newer comedians that are making movies.
Yes,
they,
but yeah. More for shock value.
Really. Right, I think so.
I think that started when you never see, like, really full frontal nudity for men. In films,
which
right?
is a shame.
Well, especially when we're talking about Jeff, right? You ladies out there, let it love him, Jeff.
Okay, so you see his chest just a tiny little bit, because usually all his movies, for some reason, he's unbuttoning his shirt.
Right. So I think the film that kind of like started that, like full frontal nudity, like for men, and that are in that comedic world, is the one with Kristen Bell and Jason...
Oh, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah. Like he just totally goes for it in that film.
Yeah, he is an interesting guy.
It was very funny.
Jason Segel, oh
never
my god.
Never see that in an 80s film. Or any film, I think.
And then you hear the flapping. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're getting off topic.
We're getting off topic, but I'm trying to let you know how different like the rating system was from back then to today. So there's a period, I think, with Jeff Goldblum films where he became, I think it was Jurassic Park. I know we're talking about
a sex
film.
Symbol.
Not as a sex symbol, but he when he played that mathematician, every role since then, he's playing the same guy.
Yeah, hot, nerdy guy.
A mathematician. And
yeah.
He starts, so do you know, like, you're a big fan. Is there any insight to that? Or did he just become that? Or that's who he really is on the outside?
You know, I'm not really sure because I think they asked him this at one of, like, his Q&A sessions during, like, his jazz performance. And I think it's just that he kind of gravitates towards those characters.
Okay.
And sometimes they write for him, so.
Okay. But it's like he's, like, became this that character.
Well, he is really. His mannerisms are. You know, someone asked him if it was a stutter because of the way he speaks, and he's like, no, this is just the way I speak. So it's like he plays into that stuff, kind of like the oddness.
He was in where I think like his real oddness like shined recently is the Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
That was a great character.
Oh, my God.
It was
he's
so
gorgeous in it.
So you have a shot with him. I told you that, right?
His wife is like 2 years older than me. Yeah.
Yeah. His wife is 36.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And he's, what, 68? Yeah. or 67. He's going to be 67 or 68 next month, October 22nd.
That's my cousin's birthday.
Well, your cousin shares it with the man, Jeff Goldblum.
So I guess that it makes sense now that the film was shot in Paris because it's super French. Like, it's just overtly French, even though they're in, like, a French restaurant, but it's just so much.
There's really no...
Like, a New York French restaurant wouldn't be that French.
Yeah, and it kind of looks like, too, it almost looks like a ballroom type thing, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like, in Hello, Dolly, I don't know if you've seen that, that she, like, makes her grand entrance as, like, a ballroom when she's singing.
Those are giant sets, though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, this is, like, a theater set. It's just smaller.
It might have been actually shot in a restaurant, though.
Yeah, I think so.
But there was not many locations for this, too. It was the restaurant, the apartment.
Therapist's office.
The therapist's office, and maybe a couple of exterior shots.
Yeah.
That was it.
Like, in the beginning, yeah, with the magazine.
And it grossed this film. I don't know what the budget was, but when I saw how much it grossed, it was like just under $800,000.
And this is 80s money.
This is 80s money.
So it's a little bit more now, but still, for that time.
I don't know. Like, I'm curious to know how much it cost, because, again, there are names in this film that were, you know, pretty big back then.
I mean, when you see the premise and you see it on paper and the names, you're like, oh. This is, you think it's something else than what it actually is.
Right. Yeah, it's, I don't recommend it.
You know, this is the end. That's when you get to the end, not right now. So the one thing that I was laughing at is that they place ads, like dating ads in papers. And I was thinking, like, oh, this is like pre-Craigslist.
Yes, yes.
Like, obviously pre-Tinder, pre-all of that. And the one thing that remains the same even in this day and age is that most first dates are awkward.
Right. Just another little tidbite. what's his name? Durang?
Christopher Durang.
Christopher Durang. According to Durang, both he and Altman wrote separate screenplays. Ultimately, Durang's script was rewritten substantially by Altman, with Durang later describing the project as, quote, a very unhappy experience and outcome.
Well, that makes me sad because the characters in theory are having fun. Oh, my God. Prudence is so annoying. Can I just talk about her for a second? I'm trying to be, like, kind to female characters. I don't want to be, like, one of those that's like, that woman, blah, blah, blah. But her character is such a bummer. Like, even in the beginning, it's like they're not really getting food service, which is kind of like a running gag in the film. Mm-hmm. She's like, I need to eat because... And then she's making, like, faces and just being extra big. And I'm just like, who would want to see this woman? Because she's so insane. But then again, so is he. But
they're both insane. But he always has, like, it seems, the upper hand. He always, like, gets one over on somebody. That's another theme, too. You can look at, like, this film where women aren't really, you know, so much, I want to say valued, but...
There's a part which, you know, and I love Jeff Goldblum. Sorry, hon, but I got to say this. He's, like, forcing himself on her, basically, when they're in the apartment.
Right, but that's, like, how, I don't want to say, like, that's how it was back in those days, but, like, at least it, women weren't, like today, like, you know, with all these different types of, like,
social movements. Yeah, the woman might be the one doing that.
Right, yeah, but, like, you can, the woman always seems to be, like, has to be, like, rescued or is always, like, in peril or is always, like,
Looking for a date,
a like, you know, yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of silly. It was like a cartoon version.
Yeah,
of
like
that.
An extreme example of that. But yeah, she really annoyed me, and the therapy sessions were interesting, especially because so everybody's hooking up. Basically, it's like incest everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The waiters are hooking up with the coat check girl, or the therapists are hooking up with the patients, hooking up with each other. You know, it's just completely insane how much people are just going for it. And the therapists kind of seem to think that it's fine, like,
right.
Because they're doing it too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's why, all their licenses should be pulled.
Yeah, like, how do you go from being in a session, not only, like, sleeping with your patient, but then later on, being in a session and taking a break to screw your coworker? How does that happen?
I don't know. But,
and apparently it's been happening for a very long time because it's like they have this thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to... You watched this, what, last night?
I saw last night, and I was watching it again this morning.
Yeah, I watched it like when you first asked me, like a couple weeks ago.
I think they say a quarter two or something when they meet, when the two therapists are always meeting. It's like a time that they always decide on. And whenever it's that time, they disappear and hook up.
It's so weird. It's so weird. And then, like,
it was like 6 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. There's like one set, like one session she walks into. And when she opens up the door, there's like, I guess the therapist, I don't know, secretary or whatever, like boobs out, like leaning up against the wall. Like, I guess was, you know, trying to, you know, do something with the therapist. Then she like quickly covers up. And like, you know, then they just go into the session like nothing.
Like nothing happens. Like, hey, yeah, I don't.
80s.
I guess 80s, so. 80s,
excess, cocaine, Ronald Reagan.
And boobs. If you're into boobs, dudes, you could watch this.
Not really.
No, it's that girl twice. And then the waitress or Kolchak girl, like she's hooking up with some other guy.
And you see her boobs?
Yeah, you see her boobs.
Yeah, yes, yes.
I mean, in that instance, I would get why, but there was no need for it. But in the other instance, the flashing, we didn't need to see the front part. We could have just seen the back of the flashing.
Did you just tweet out the time codes for that? And just for the guys that are listening. Well, yeah. Just, like, that's the only moments I would watching it.
How dare you? And there's like a second for the ladies of Jeff Goldblum undoing his shirt. So there you go.
Well,
I'll timestamp that one too.
Yeah, but with Jeff Goldblum, his clothes, like, it was like circus. Like, there was one, like, suit that he was wearing. It was like a circus tent.
Yeah.
Like, it was striped or whatever.
It was like, and also the one that he was wearing that was like a cream color or khaki color or whatever.
Terrible.
Yeah, it was really huge.
Yeah, it was gigantic. Like, he's a tall guy, right?
He's like 6'4".
Yeah, so he's a tall, so all of his clothes are big. But this is like 80s big and.
Like an upside down triangle. Like, it's just.
That was so bad.
Yeah. I'm just like picturing it and just seeing like the cut, the big shoulder pads. I thought the shoulder pads were a thing for women so that they could feel like powerful in the workplace. I didn't know that men had shoulder pads too.
In the jackets, yeah.
So you were all like football players back then?
Yeah, pretty much. I remember when I was a kid, like when I wore like, you know, the suits or whatever, the shoulder pads were heavy. It was kind of ridiculous.
I mean, why would you need that unless you're like going charging at another person?
I know. It was And it was funny. It was like, I remember growing up, my mom had like, you know, when she would do the laundry, and like some of the shoulder pads, like they would
fall
apart. Yes,
they would wrinkle. I remember that from my mom's stuff left over in the 90s.
Yeah, or they would just like, you would find up just a pad, the shoulder pad in the dryer or something.
That's insane. Yes, I remember that. It was so funny because I would like help my mom with laundry. I'm like, what is this? And she's like, oh, it broke, whatever. And that was when she was getting rid of her 80s stuff. And I was like, people wore this? And I thought it was like a goof, like on movies.
It was such a bad time. I remember as a kid.
See, what I do remember is 89, basically. I remember Madonna. I remember Aerosmith. I remember MTV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember Saved by the Bell. Like, these are the things from 80s, tail end of the 80s that I remember.
Yeah.
I was too young for the other stuff. So, for me, and Saved by the Bell went into the 90s, so it was just kind of that. It was just bright colors and weird geometric patterns and things like that. So it was before this whole. I mean, though, he is wearing a shirt that has like patterns, odd patterns.
Oh yeah, it's just, it's like, it looks like the 1980s threw up on all of his clothes. This entire wardrobe was just, you know, the 80s vomited on it.
Yeah.
The entire decade.
It was just. Yeah, it was rough in terms of the clothing. I mean, I feel like if you were to shoot this film now and set it in the 80s, and with the same clothes, you would be like, oh, dude, that's too 80s. Like, this is a stereotype. You can't do that. That wasn't real.
Right. But it was.
But it was.
Totally was.
Especially in this film. Good Lord. What do you think about Bob's character, the Christopher Guest?
He is probably, like, the best acted out of all of them, from what I remember. I mean, maybe being a little bit biased about Christopher Guest, but he... You can tell he has range as an actor. Mm-hmm. And he just like totally, you know, went into that world of, you know, being like, you know, this homosexual man that really was upset about, you know, what was happening to him, that he was losing his
partner to a woman.
Like, must have been like, you know, terrible for him. So I think Christopher Guest was probably the best performance out of all of them. Yeah. I mean, and it wasn't so much what he said, because it wasn't that many lines so much for him, but it was just his
mannerisms.
Yeah, it was great. So he really, like,
he's really good at, like, leaving in a, like, puff, like,
yeah, but, like, even just his facial expressions and, like, when he entered the room or whatever, you can just feel what he was feeling. So, yeah, I think he had the best performance.
And aside from the, you know, the homophobia and stuff like that, there's also, like, a bias against bisexuality, because even his partner was like, oh, he's not bi, you know, it's like this whole thing, like, you know, choose a side kind of attitude,
right?
And for him it was like, no, this is who I am.
That didn't happen until the 90s,
really. Now that makes sense that it's a play. See, in theater that's more acceptable than it would be in a mainstream film.
You
like just
so?
Just these discussions in that time, at least
at that time. Okay.
Because theater was, especially if it's off-Broadway, just like this, people suspend their disbelief and are just like, oh, it's just a play, even if it's happening.
But it's also off-Broadway because it's kind of like an alternative storyline, which is not really mainstream, which that wasn't really mainstream.
No.
Like, you didn't see that so much on TV or in movies. And if you did, it was, you know, being made fun of as a joke.
Yeah. And it's also like the therapy thing, all these sessions that you're kind of dropping into, I don't know if there's any like modern or more recent films that has that kind of take, like with therapy constantly.
The only, like, when you see like therapy type films, it's usually it's also a comedy, but like Analyze This, like the Robert De Niro. So it's to an extreme. It's either comedy or it goes like to horror. Like Silence of the Lambs.
Or like also like taking some kind of medicine or your brain that alters your life in some way, better or worse. It's one of those things, like those thrillers.
It's always an extreme problem. Like either it's a horror or it's something just making fun of the whole, you know, concept of therapy.
Right. I mean, as a mentally ill person, I can
speaking
tell you,
mentally ill,
there's nothing funny about it. No, I laugh all the time because of it. So this film.
Anxiety sucks.
Oh my God, it's like the worst. Especially, so I started doing, okay, this is complete tangent, doing acrylic on my nails so that I could stop picking them. So now I flick them. So it's like there's always something.
Are you like a hypochondriac? You always worry about stuff?
No, it's just that I have anxiety, just like massive anxiety, like over, like when the students come over, I work at a school, you know, like when they're approaching me, like I get anxious, like,
really?
Well, what are they going to ask me? Like, do I have it? Like, I'm thinking ahead and just like panicking.
Yeah, I'm just worried about like, you know,
the world ending, which
health
you might.
And things like that and whatever. That's my, but like, as far as people approach me, whatever, that I'm okay with.
Which is so odd because I've been interviewing people since I was like 14 years old and, you know, I have musicians come on my radio show, Sinister Girls Live, Fridays at 4 p.m.
Boom, plug.
So I have people come in and I talk to them. I'm perfectly fine. I've interviewed celebrities and been around celebrities, been around Jeff Goldblum. And that, it's easy. For
okay.
me.
That's good, though.
But then regular people, it's like, shut it off. Turn it on.
But that's something that should tell you right away that's something that you can definitely work on and control.
Yeah.
Because if, you know, if you're around your idols, that can be really intimidating. And it doesn't bother you? Yeah.
Like, for a second, I get super excited, and then I'm like, take it down a notch, and then I can function. Yeah, I don't know why that is. I guess because I don't want to scare them. And early
as a
on,
fan?
Yeah,
are,
I like
are you
to
a craze fan?
Professional craze fan.
Professional craze fan.
No, because I remember as a teenager when I wanted to get like press passes, sneak into shows, or get on the guest list, I had to pretend that I had like a publication, which is Sinister Girls. It was a little zine. So then I had to pretend to be professional. So even if I was dying on the inside because Good Charlotte or Newfound Glory is there, I had to hold it in. And then as soon as I would leave, I would just scream my head off.
My name's Leslie. I just want
to... Yeah, there was like a lot of that. Like, hi. Just a lot of that nervousness. And I was just like, hey. But inside, I'm screaming like a 14-year-old.
That's cool that you can, like, you know, compress it.
Yeah, like last year, I interviewed Jeff from 98 Degrees, and, you know, I was telling him how, oh, yeah, I would see them at TRL or whatever, and went to an autograph signing of theirs, and, you know, I shook their hand, and I was fine.
Yeah.
But I saw these girls just screaming in their faces, and I was like, what is that about? And he was like, there were girls that would sneak into our hotel rooms and chase our vans, and I was like, okay, that's a little much. Like, saying hello, getting a wave, an autograph, I'm done. I don't need to be so extra. What are you achieving with that?
Yeah, I've got to meet and see a lot of celebrities, too. I think the last celebrity I saw was I was flying back to New York from LAX, and I'm you know waiting by the you know to get on the plane, and the guy walks in front of me, and he stops and he looks at me. We look at each other. He starts smiling at me because almost like he recognized me. And I'm looking at him. I smile. I'm like, oh hey, what's up? And it was Nick Kroll.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so sweet and really nice. I'm like, hey, Nick, how's it going?
I love Nick Kroll.
So like you know I didn't you know freak out or anything because yeah he's a regular guy going back home.
Yeah, he's just like what is it, the hormone monster in Big Mouth.
Yeah, he's I never watched that, but he was
it's so good.
He was in he had a small part in What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay.
FX, the vampire mockumentary.
Yeah, I'm not
so
familiar
funny.
With that.
So funny. Yeah, he's awesome.
But yeah, back to Jeff Goldblum.
Back to all things Jeff Goldblum.
The man of the hour or the half hour. So I take it that you're not a fan of this film.
I am not. I am not a fan of this film. If I could get a refund from Amazon, I would get it. But, you know, Jeff Bezos, the other Jeff, is an evil corporate, you know, vampire.
Yes, so Jeff Goldblum, good.
Good.
Bezos,
not
bad.
So good.
So if you were to rate it on our rating system, 10 out of 10 Goldblums, how many Goldblums would you give this?
I'd give it a 4.
A 4?
Yeah.
That's fair. I thought you were going to give it less than that.
No, I mean, because I like Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome. I think this was more of like a passion project type thing, an art piece, so I respect that. So I respect all the people that were in it, even Robert Altman, whatever. But it was something that, you know, that they felt strong about, they wanted to do, and looks like they had fun with it.
Yeah.
It does look like a film they had fun with.
Into theater, like he said that before. So, like, he likes stage acting as well. So I could see why this would appeal to him.
Yeah, I've definitely, I gave it 4 because, you know.
Goldblums.
4 Goldblums because it looks like they had a good time. And that's about it. I did not.
Well, as we mentioned a few times, it does look and read as a stage play. Just the direction and the way everything is set up and the sets themselves.
I'd be curious to see what the original Christopher Durang's version of it was.
That's the play version. I kind of want to see it. Like, I think that would translate a lot better. Mm-hmm. I'm a theater nerd. I have a BA in theater arts. And so all I did for a lot of my program was just go to plays and different plays. So I feel like this, because it's so zany, I could definitely see that weirdo sitting in the back eating. Like, that's a total stage thing. Because it's like you're distracted a little bit by, you know, you're seeing this dialogue going on, the conflict, and then, you know, the waitress or waiters are like hooking up in a little corner, and then the weird guy is just looking up like, oh, what's going on, you know? So I could definitely see that as a play, and it would read a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's not my favorite Jeff Goldblum movie.
Okay.
Let me preface it by that. And Jeff, if you're listening, which I hope you are at some point, I do love you. This is called Love You, Jeff. I had no idea what this film was about. Mm-hmm. I honestly had never heard of it. Mm-hmm. I only know like his big hits and things like that. So when I saw the title and it starred Jeff Goldblum and all these things, I was like, okay, I'm in, you know? Mm-hmm. And it said something based on a play and I was like, I like plays. Mm-hmm. I'm totally in. With that said, I'm going to be a little more generous than you. I gave it a 5 out of 10 Goldblum.
Okay. All right.
I think it's because I personally like theater.
Okay.
So part of me, which is, it's not supposed to be the point of the film. You're supposed to accept the film as it is.
Right.
But a part of me kept picturing it as a play, kept restaging it, kind of like, oh, I could see this on the stage. This will play well here and the direction and things like that. Because I took stagecraft as well, and we had to, like, block and do all that stuff, staging upstage, downstage. And so I kept thinking about that, like, staging it in my head, which maybe you're not supposed to do.
Not supposed to do. You're supposed to accept it as a film, but I guess it was such a bad film that we were picturing it as a play, what it really was. And I think part of that has to do with the way it was shot. Because of the camera, there was not a lot of cuts. You know, you got the wide shot, and then it usually moves in closer, like, you know, to a two shot or, you know, expressions of people's faces. There was none of that, or very minimal.
Just the creepy guy in the corner.
Just creepy guy in the corner. And, we could do without creepy guy in the corner, extreme close-ups, mid shots.
What is that?
Two shots.
That was just weird. And then his hair was, like, shaved head, and then he had, like, a patch of hair in the back.
Yeah.
Which was disturbing.
Yeah. It was just like trying to be like, look how weird we are here.
It's like, look how I eat. I've been eating the same piece of steak for 20 hours, yeah. Essentially.
And I get the same table,
all
the
same
restaurant, and I'm always gawking at people.
And I'm the only one who gets service, apparently,
yeah,
because everybody's hooking up. Because
I'm just here eating my steak while everybody hooks up.
Do you think that his actor secret was that he was the owner of the restaurant or something like that? Like, that's his little thing. Like, I'm going to play it. Like, that's why I'm always here and I'm always lurking because this is my restaurant. Do you think that's, as an actor, do you think that that was kind of like his
That was his backstory?
Yeah, his own backstory. Because
well,
otherwise, literally,
you know
it's creepy weirdo.
I'm going to go with that because he would always be with, he would always be in that place.
Yeah.
Eating that steak because no one would cast him in anything with that wacky haircut. All right.
Yeah, that was. I wonder if he wears his hair like that or if it's just for the film because that's a bold choice. I mean, if the script says creepy weirdo, then you're like, aha.
Boom. Sign me up.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was really painful.
I'm just glad there weren't children in this because that would be taken completely
that
different.
That would be definitely looked at as a possible
predator,
know,
yeah.
Yeah, they might have, Robert Altman might have been taken away.
This film, wow. We have the big shoulder pads.
Yes.
The geometric shapes.
Yes.
The wacky therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Hooking up.
Mm-hmm.
Boobs occasionally for no reason.
Boobs.
Crazy guys complaining in French.
Right.
To the therapist.
Faux New York, one was actually shot in Paris.
Fake New York. New York Magazine, which
York.
Is how they meet
yeah.
on an ad.
Right.
We.
Well, she wrote for People Magazine, supposedly. Was that it?
I don't know.
Did she say People? I think she said People Magazine.
It was just so much.
Don't see the movie.
And then, like, she was dropping. There were magazines everywhere,
yeah.
So it was hard to kind of keep track. And, like, if you notice, there was an emphasis on that New York Magazine because to connect it as it being fate that they met, they switched magazines. So they would have to kind of see each other again, or was it a sign?
All I can think of is when I rent this film and you rented this film.
I own this.
Somebody, you own it. Okay. It was somebody that is doing, I guess, like their analysis of like sales and stuff and saw our two purchases and must have said, who the fuck would, where did this come from? Is this like, you know, a purchase from like the 80s or something? Like, you know, a residual?
So Jeff, you're gonna get like 15 cents in the mail soon.
I don't know, but somebody at Amazon, somebody at whatever, I don't know what studio.
I don't even know. I mean, it opened nicely. It looked like a real studio, not one of those that no longer exist studios.
It was, yeah, definitely. It raised a, what do you call it? Raised a
concern.
Somebody said notice. This was definitely a topic of conversation. Our
yeah.
purchases because no one. In their right mind, would buy or rent this film Beyond Therapy. Please don't.
No. I mean, I feel like you all need to experience this. I'm not going to say I'm not going to torture
do that. You.
Do you
want a fan base? Do you want to get a fan base for the show? Please
yeah,
don't
do.
Chase them away with Beyond Therapy.
Okay, so I guess we'll just
You're
mark.
You need therapy beyond, like, you know.
So mark the Jeff Goldblum second, the boob seconds,
yeah.
I guess, so that you could check that out.
Definitely. And that's it. And then move on to, like, you know, Jurassic Park or something.
Which was the previous episode. And The Fly, I'm terrified of. I remember seeing it as
a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
When he just, like, ate stuff. He just regurgitated.
Ugh. I remember not thinking he was hot in that movie.
He was good in that movie, though.
No, he was good. But I didn't have, a crush on him.
Well, it was hard when he turns into a...
Yeah, it was disgusting. And I remember being scared of him for a while. And then I don't know if it was Independence Day or what it was that made me turn and be like, oh, he's hot. I almost went to Jewish nerdy guys. So
okay.
I think that's part of it. So, yeah. Anyways, 5 out of 10 Goldblums. You give it 4 out of 10.
4 out of 10 Goldblums.
And any closing thoughts?
No. I mean, just I just would want to know if I can get my $2.99 somehow back. But... Can I plug something?
Yes, of course. I was going
to
ask you.
Can you listen to my podcast, The Hoof, with myself and Tommy Lombardozzi on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all that good stuff.
Is it on iHeartRadio as well?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Waiting for them to get back to me. But yeah, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. Yeah.
So tell us what the podcast is about.
It's basically, Tommy Lombardozzi is a guy that approached me, wrote to me, I guess about a year or so ago, because he's a fan of the Tell Him Steve Dave mm-hmm. podcast that I'm on, which is with two guys from Comic Book Men mm-hmm. and one guy, a friend of mine from Impractical Jokers, Brian Quinn, and Walt Flanagan and Brian Johnson.
These are all Kevin Smith's
friends. These are all Kevin Smith people. I occasionally am on that. It's like they're all different like characters on that show. I'm one of them. So Tommy was a big fan of that show. And he reached out to me to do an art project because I paint sometimes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I do abstract painting.
Can you paint an abstract of Jeff Goldblum?
I probably not. So
you can't draw a chest?
No. So he reached out to me because he's an artist. He's a really good artist. And he wanted to know if we can collaborate on something. And then right away I'm thinking, this guy's just a fanboy, whatever. Because mm-hmm. I get a lot of people that try to contact me. So to get mm-hmm. to my friends. So it's always like, yeah, get out of here.
I mean,
so,
that's why I have you here.
Exactly. That's why I'm here. So
Kevin, if you're listening, no, just kidding.
He, you know, reached out. And I'm like, yeah, this guy seems legit. He's from, you know, he's from Brooklyn, whatever. He seems cool. Then we started talking, and long story short, his grandfather and my grandfather were best friends. And, like, his grandfather was also my aunt's, like, godfather.
That is, like, the small world thing. Isn't that crazy?
So, and we met prior, like, in the 1980s. Him and his brother came to my house and, like, went in the pool. We hung out and, like, you know.
Do you have a picture with him as a kid?
I don't. Well, he did, but he think he lost it in Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, that's too bad.
But weird, small world. So we decided to do a podcast together.
Because, you know, that would have been cool to have that photo as, part of a cover kind of thing.
Yes, it would. But no, I think it was lost to Hurricane Sandy. So, check it out. It's two of us just being stupid.
And plug your Twitter.
Oh, and you can follow me on Twitter, Chris_Laudando, LAUDANDO.
And you can follow us at Love You Jeff Pod, and that is LOVEU Jeff Pod. You can find us on Instagram, which Jeff Goldblum is on Instagram, so I've been tagging him on all of these, so hopefully, fingers crossed, he gets the message that we love you. And also Twitter, and you can follow me at Sinister Girls, SinisterGirlz. I can't even spell, and I've had this brand since I was 14 years old. So, oh my God, that's 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Holy crap, I'm old. Anyways, I still have a chance with him. I'm 2 years younger than his wife.
You totally have a chance. You're totally in.
Mrs. Goldblum, rest easy. He's not into me. Believe me, I try. No, just kidding. He's very sweet and you're a very lucky woman. So anyway, that is all. And I figured out what my sign-off is going to be. So thank you, Chris, for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see you next time. Love you, Jeff.